Make sure you get us loud and clear.
Welcome to Used Wigs Radio.
This is the radio station with nothing but...
Lonely. Download some friends.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Used Wigs Radio, podcast number 88. We are coming at you live from L'Etage, above the Philadelphia's foremost creperia, Beaumont. And we have a live studio audience who are very, very gabby tonight. Hey, guys. We love it, though. We appreciate the gab, and we appreciate the talk, and we appreciate you being here. It's a we appreciate the energy. Thank you. Thank you for coming out. I'm Jeff Lyons, your host. Next to me here is Todd Marone, co-host, toddmarone.com. And this is Russ Stork of Russ, another new website? Russ's Crepe Truck? Are you starting a competing business to L'Etage?
That's just the way I am.
My God, Russ. I don't know. It might hurt our show here. You know, you doing this? Let's maybe think twice about doing the crepe truck.
So if we have a falling out with this crepery, then we can always record from Russell's crepe truck.
That's yeah, right.
It's nice to have a backup crepe.
The attic of my crepe truck.
Location. The attic of your crepe truck. You guys into the new all the new crepe truck TV shows? I mean the food truck TV shows?
Are there? I didn't even know there are such things.
There's a food truck race where it's a bunch of different food trucks get together, compete against each other, and go to different cities.
Are you serious?
Yeah. No.
They've stopped thinking of ideas for shows. It's just now combining other existing shows. So it's like this is the so all any number of food shows combined with Great American Race or whatever.
They take all of your the favorite foods, cook it really quick, and charge you $15 for a sandwich at a food truck. There's a food truck in front of my building at work that is, I guess, Jose Garces, probably the most famous Philadelphia chef right now. He's like Tinto and what's the name of his restaurant? There we go, yes, a lot of them. Amada, there you go, thank you. Been to him. I don't go out, I wouldn't know any of this. But when his food truck comes in front of our building, it is crazy. Within 5 minutes, it's like 50 people just coming with their $50 bills saying, give me one taco because I have a $50 bill.
Is it super expensive?
Yeah. I don't know. It's like I used to, you know, the food trucks around Penn, I'm used to a food truck being like, $5, you get a taco or something.
They still have that crepe truck over by Penn?
Yeah.
That's good.
He's great. Yeah. He's like an artisan, like that guy. But it takes you like 10 minutes to get an actual crepe, it's and it's a very long thing. But enough about food trucks. I have a topic that I think is more important that just hit me the other day. You know when somebody has a snafu, when they kind of make a mistake, when they do their email or reply all, when they mean to just reply?
Yes.
I think we've all gotten good at that where you don't do that anymore. You're very cognizant if there's a big group email sent and you're like, well, I just want to tell Jerry that these other guys are jerks, and you just reply. Well, Facebook is very confusing now with their messaging. Like if you get a message from somebody saying, like to a group, saying, hey, is anybody going to attend this event? Just thinking blah, blah, blah. It's not very intuitive when you reply if you're replying to this, that person, or the other person. I don't think. And now, I didn't do anything wrong, but somebody else did.
Facebook errs on the side of getting more and more people involved in every interaction and exchange anyway.
Yes,
yeah,
they like more the merrier is there, the more people involved, so the reach is out there more. But somebody, you know, one of my friends said, hey, there's a college function going on. Sent it out to about 20 people. Is anybody going? So me being the normal person, I waited for three other people to reply just to be cool. I wanted to wait it out. And then I'm like, yeah, I'm going. And I also found out, hey, Jen's going, and it's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be great, and I'll spread the word and do my part to make this thing a great thing that we're all going to be in. And then, you know, no one else replied. Then the next person replied, and it was like, hey, Joe, Jen, I'm 50-50. I don't know if I'm going. I don't know if anybody I want to see is going to be there, if anybody's going to, anybody there I want to even talk to, Jen. And then she hit send. And right away, I'm like, did she know she replied all? And then I got kind of offended.
Because you had already said.
Yeah, because I already said, hey,
I'm not sure.
I'm going to be here. And she's 50-50 that she even wants to see me or talk to me.
Yeah.
And this is like someone I'm friends with, friendly with. And it took like every ounce of, you know, restraint to just say something snarky quickly. So I let it like sit for a day, hoping that someone else would reply and someone else be offended. And no one else was offended, so then I just replied, I'm like, hey, Jenny, I'm hoping some actual cool people attend too. Maybe I'll talk to them, Jeff. And then, of course, 2 days, I'm sweating it out, right, waiting for a reply, and then absolutely nothing, radio silence. So right now, I'm in the middle of waiting for the reply. So I'm sweating it a little bit.
Is this a little call for help on the podcast?
Yeah, if she's listening, you know, it wasn't very nice. If it was a direct barb at me, I could understand. But I think you offended a couple other people, and those 20 people it was also CC'd to. So have you done any sort of epic email reply to where you know, where people get fired when they do things like this? There's a lot of stories. Russ, you're in a business that I'm sure a lot of clients back and forth where there's a...
Did I tell you that story about... All right, so the one time there was this girl that I knew, and her she was like part of the street team for like a for a singer-songrieter.
Yeah, Brian has a street team here too tonight.
And so he was this guy was playing at the Point in Bryn Mawr, and so she was part of the street team, and she sent out this email to a zillion people like, hey, blah blah blah's playing at the Point, you should come on down. And at the bottom of this email she sent out, there was like, you know, this standard message that he had probably crafted for her that she sent. And then at the bottom, there was like this other wording that started going off the bottom. I'm like, what the hell is that? And I scrolled down. I don't know how she did this, but basically she forwarded a long conversation that she was having back and forth with a friend of hers.
Oh, nice.
She must have been in the midst of having that conversation, got this other email, like sent the flyer on top of it and forwarded the whole conversation. But this conversation
was awesome.
Was brutal. Oh. So the friend was revealing all of this personal stuff she was going through at therapy.
Oh, good.
Right?
Because you're supposed to put that in emails.
They were going back and forth. And so she's revealing this horrendously personal stuff. And then she's saying things like, and then the friend is saying back to this person, I know, how's everything going with the different guys? And she lists all these guys and like what's going on with them. I don't know about this guy. I happen to be on that list.
Oh, Russell's on the list.
Yeah. She was like, and that Russ, I don't know what his deal is. But I looked at the recipient list, and every guy she listed was in that.
What?
Yeah. So
this sounds a little set up.
No, this happened. So so as I'm reading it, like, I got that feeling, like, you know, like, when something is happening, you're like, oh, my God. It felt like, and somebody's, like, pouring hot water down your neck. Like, I was reading it, like, I can't believe she did this. And then all of a sudden, and this doesn't work, I start getting all these messages. Blah, 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 would like to recall that message. Blah, blah, would like to recall that message. Blah, blah. Like, she must have seen it and was like, oh, my God, recall. So everybody.
That doesn't work, does
everybody
it?
Get, no, it doesn't. So everybody got this.
That just makes you want to read it more. Like, holy crap, that email I just glanced over needs to be recalled.
Oh, yeah.
There's good stuff in that.
Yeah.
And it should be called alert, there's good stuff in
That's right. And I'm not sure that everybody would have even seen that there was all that crazy stuff at the bottom. But her friend was probably like, do you know what you? I'm talking so badly personal.
That's the email you forwarded that you sent back. And you're like, there's no way. And my nickname is not small in the pants. I don't know what she's talking about. That was wrong. Like, I saw your whole reply, which I thought was a little rough.
It's not somebody that I ever actually went out with. But
no, but you were in there.
I guess I was in the mix in her mind.
So did that just then?
And she liked you.
Yeah. She liked me.
Yeah.
One time my wife was mailed a picture. I think maybe I mentioned this to you before. Just a photograph. She had I think her name was like H. Hall, which could have been any number of people whose first name starts with an H. Hall. And she was mailed a photograph of a woman's naked upper torso, so her chest, all marked up like the way that a
plastic surgery
would have, like the ideas that this person, and I think with no other explanation except for like, what about this? You know, like just the torso with like marker lines and like arrows and.
Did you respond? And you could have done like a real. You did?
She's like, yeah, I don't know who you think I am, but.
No, but like to not even start it that way, be like, well, here's what I think.
Yeah, go into
like a very, very strange dissertation. Yeah.
How about a pixie cut?
Yeah, if you just ignored the nudity and just picked out, like, your nose definitely needs work. I think you should go with that. She's like, damn it, I was talking about my breasts.
Was the whole face? Her whole face was on there?
No.
No,
just the torso.
Yeah, mostly just torso. We still have it, yeah.
Nice.
It's in a little frame. It's our kids over on the mantle.
We made a mouse pad out of it, yeah.
A mug, mouse pad. Do you remember back in the day when, like, it was Cafe Press? It was like when the web hit or any business you had. I got totally wrapped up with my website. They're like, we can take any sort of thing you have a logo and make a product out of it.
A mug.
You're like, anything?
Frisbee.
And it was print on demand. So you could basically say, like, yeah, take my logo, put it on a mug. Yes, and a Frisbee. Yes, and girls' panties.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. And what's the one that every you know, local cover band has is the thong. And you know that they're selling a lot of those.
Yeah, they're not one was ever sold, right? But I was caught up in that, and I just had my Cafe Press store, and it was like 50 items. It was like a messenger bag. You could get – and I actually got a messenger bag with like the logo on there and stuff. But some of the products were just so crappy, like silkscreened on there, not even – some of them were literally like a sticker. They made a sticker
a decal,
just put it on like a mug.
Oh.
And then you're like, this is a great mug. I peeled it off.
Admiral.com's been there, yeah.
Yeah, I think everybody who started a business at one point was just like, Cafe Press, thank you.
Finally, someone will take me seriously. I have my own mug.
I still have
one. Is that the picture? Can we see it?
No.
We're not going to be able to.
Because my wife.
You might have to show it
for a podcast, yeah. We're just going to pass this around.
With the photograph.
Whoa! Oh my! Good God! Get it over there, quick!
Wait!
I think she's perfect. Holy! All right, right now for the podcast, Todd's wife
is
here.
What is it, 2001?
And there's a very large-breasted female.
She still has it in her inbox.
Wow!
Three phones later.
Heather, I still don't believe. Can you forward that? It's Jeff@usewigs.com. Also Jeff@gojeffgo.com. Just make sure you send it to both. Oh, yeah. All right. Thank you.
I think he's right. Yeah.
I was a bit confused.
Like how's it healing up? I think you're right. Yeah.
She's like, I'll go for the triple G. I'm not happy with the quadruple F. Wow. We got visuals. You know what's going to be weird is posting that photo to our podcast website. It'll be our first not safe for work.
It is anonymous. She probably could figure that out, right?
Figure out who sent it?
No. Blur it out a little bit. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to say, yeah.
My wife doesn't carry many things in case of emergency her purse. But the one thing she did have tonight was just in case we mentioned.
Yeah, Heather, I actually asked. I'm like, can I see a picture of the kids? She's like, I don't carry those.
But you got that a long time ago. Why? How did you get to that so readily on your phone?
I could picture like three phones ago. And you're just like, hi guy at AT&T store. Yeah, I just need my number transferred and this Hooters shot. Make sure the one thing you need to do is transfer that over, and that would be great. Thank you. No, my contactless, screw that. I'm going to start from scratch. I want the jugs. Well, that didn't go where I was thinking it was going tonight. So, we have all had some.
Always unexpected.
Yeah. We are hitting Todd. We're in school, right? Todd Marone is an art teacher.
Back to school.
Anything new and exciting in the world? Back to school with kids.
Well, I have a back to school story, and this is not only back to school for me as a teacher, but like every year, I have many students who I've had in the past will come. They have pre-designated in high school like job shadowing days where they have to pick someone that has a profession that they might want, or at least a person they want to spend the day with. And I'm always very flattered they come back and I hang out. So I had two or three students one day. Following me around, and since they were in school, we got a new class of kids with significant needs.
Right.
That we didn't have that population when they were there. So we're chatting all day, and I'm showing them the ropes of teaching art and making art. And I was like, "Oh, let me tell you something. Before the next class comes in, just so you know, it's unlike any students that you saw when you were here at the middle school. Four guys, very low functioning, nonverbal." You know, they don't hold an instrument or a tool. They have really, really significant delays and disabilities and this and that. And I said, you might see kids kind of run out or make some noises that are really unexpected. So I wanted to prepare them
sure.
because this was a population they weren't aware. And I said, but they all have AIDS. Mm-hmm. So it's easier for me to manage this group. And it was like dead silent and looking at me.
Oh, I just got.
And then finally, like one is this. Wait a minute, they all have AIDS? And I said, and I'm like, yeah. So we're very fortunate that they all have AIDS. So, you know, because otherwise I wouldn't be able to handle this group of kids because they're very challenging.
It didn't cross your mind once.
So then their faces are like getting more and more horrified. They're like, wait a minute. On top of all that, they all have AIDS? And I'm like, yeah. Like, they all have AIDS.
Dude, it's bordering on an Abbott and Costello routine,
It's honest to God truth. So we're having this conversation back and forth, and then I think their faces in retrospect are moving from, you know, upset for the kids and all of the struggles that they have on top of the AIDS, but now they're starting to think, like, this art teacher that we used to like is, like, celebrating the fact that these kids have acquired immune deficiency syndrome so he can manage, you know. So finally I realized that, of course, when I was saying AIDS, I meant instructional assistants, which is what we call them in the business.
Yeah, sure.
But anyway.
So
was there a big,
so,
like,
finally I was like,
you think I mean
AIDS? No, I mean they have assistance. And I was like, ugh! You know, like this kind of tremendous sigh of
the wind, like, that came out, like the whole room was just this.
Because they were minutes away from, like, attacking me, or even, like, you know. But that's my big back to school.
Love
story.
I'm surprised they didn't ask, like, why does AIDS make them more manageable? Does that make them,
like,
sleepy?
Why they it's like they're hobbled, you know, like they. So.
Like, they'd be real tough if they didn't have AIDS, but.
Jeez, so you. So now, how about just assistance?
But
that's a good
word. I will say, now I've become more mindful of that. And I will say that those kids did come in that class, and my teenage students, who were former middle school students, were a tremendous help. So when people say, like,
good
kids today, blah 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 blah, I don't see evidence of that. I see evidence to the contrary. Kids
good
today
kids,
are
right?
Phenomenal. Yep.
Well taught, maybe.
Yep.
Is that why?
Well, but kids today are great.
Greater
than when I was a kid.
Yeah. Well, that was a good story, Todd. Thank you. We always like to check in with what the kids are doing on our podcast, because it's important, because it really is all about the kids.
It's a little segment we call Kids Today.
Kids. Kids Today. right now, we're getting to the meat of the podcast, the good stuff. Mm-hmm. This was just kind of like filler, I would say, or something to kind of prep you all for the goodness that's coming, right? Wouldn't you say?
This is the breadcrumbs.
Yeah, the breadcrumbs are leading.
We got the actual crab.
To the good stuff. That's
okay.
Right. Because I think right now, Russ, what would you say if I say, let's bring up our first super special guest that no one knows about?
I would play the song you told me to play.
Oh. All right, let's hit it, Russ. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to bring up our first guest. He's one of our favorite guests, one of our favorite people. Philadelphia-based singer-songwriter. He has a new CD dropping in a couple of weeks called Speak to Me of Young Love. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Brian Seymour. Brian, get up here, you son of a bitch. Ryan Seymour. Right, there's your microphone.
Every second you're
Is it weird talking while you're singing? Pot him down, Russ.
What?
Pot him down. We only want one Brian going.
Pot him down.
Isn't that what you say, pot him? I'm making up words. Just making up words. Brian, thanks for coming out.
Thank you.
How you doing?
Good, good.
Good. You're busy.
I'm sorry.
No, I mean, you're just busy of late. You got a lot of stuff going on, and, you know, it's. I'm just glad you made time for us here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Now, we've known each other a while. I've known you the days when you just started out, and we're going to talk about the new CD and all that good stuff. But I want to talk about something I always find fascinating. Everybody who starts out in music, you, singer, songwriter, people in bands, they all start out doing other people's music, playing covers, going out and playing. Now, in college, you got your start, correct? Being the guy with the guitar, the fun guy, the cute guy at parties, you'd play songs, all the girls would run over, and you just kind of play the guitar for them.
I don't know if I was very fun, but I made a tremendous amount of money.
Yes, right?
That's playing covers?
Yeah.
Did you have a Brian Seymour thong? Is there one?
Cafe Press wasn't
around. Believe it or
not, the internet wasn't around.
They did not sell. They definitely did not sell. No, I mean, I had my own material, but the way you kind of got the crowd going was definitely having some covers. And it's funny because there's a certain kind of a posture that artists will have that says, you know, well, I can't play other people's music.
Right.
But I don't see how you write a song without learning how to perform songs. So to me, it was the best thing I ever did was learn how to play other people's music.
So you would then be like, all right, I'm going to throw out Brown Eyed Girl, get the people going, maybe a little Petty, maybe a little American Girl.
Yeah, what are some of the covers that...
Brian played good... Brian, you were the guy when we used to go out there who would play like Hoodoo Gurus and like stuff we weren't used to hearing. And then people would be like, wow, this guy's different. And then he would say, that's my song. Goodbye. No, of course he wouldn't do
that. I remember the 80s cover show that we went to.
That's right.
A number of years ago,
yeah. One of the first times we met you, Brian. I didn't tell Todd. I said, Brian is putting on a show downtown, and he's doing like an 80s show. He's doing like some of his favorite songs from the 80s. Todd didn't realize that it wasn't an 80s party. And when I say Todd dressed up as Mr. T from head to toe, shaved the head,
true,
grew the thing.
Mm-hmm. Grew my beard, shaved the head into a mohawk, and was surprised to hear like obscure 80s songs. Like I thought maybe it was gonna be like a pop.
Weren't you more surprised that no one else was dressed up there?
Where's the Cyndi Lauper?
I thought you were going to say that was the party you showed up as. Was it Chaka that you dressed like?
You dressed up as Chaka, one of our live shows.
I don't feel comfortable with myself.
That's right. But, Brian, what I was getting at, basically, is like when... So from the get-go, when you started doing, you know, performing, you had your own material, so you would just mix it in with the covers as well.
Okay. Exactly. Yeah.
And then it was just a logical progression. You're like... get rid of some more covers, more originals, some more covers, and then all of a sudden it was just, boom, Brian.
Yeah, and, you know, folks like yourself would come out because I do, like, Billy Bragg covers.
Yes.
You know, play a bunch of bands that people hadn't heard of, like the Hoodoo Gurus, or people who had would really come back for it because they were tired of hearing, what did you say, Brown Eyed Girl.
Brown Eyed Girl.
Yeah,
the standard. Tom Petty, same things. But, yeah, so I always find, like, when is that moment, that confidence where you're like, you know what, I'm ready now. Getting rid of all this other, you know, cover stuff, and it's just going to be the Brian Seymour show. Like, can you remember your first show, or it was just like you doing all your own stuff?
I had actually moved to Manhattan and worked in the auction business for a while, the art auction business. And then when I came
back, not like
back,
auction wars where you're auctioning like lockers on.
I don't know what that is.
Okay, that's good you don't. Anyway, I'm sorry.
And I came back, so it was kind of a way to very easily reinvent myself. So I'd been away for about a year and a half.
Oh.
So came back all original stuff. So.
Nice.
Pretty easy transition.
I'm interested in the date, the drop date, I think Jeff mentioned.
Yeah, dropping.
The CD is dropping when?
That's an excellent question. It really is. Because what happened was, I mean, the world has changed so much.
That's
since,
what I wanted to ask. Like, why do we even still have New Music Tuesdays?
Oh,
because,
I know what
you're saying. Because in my mind, you know, it made sense that it would be that certain day of the week because there were trucks involved.
For those
and
of
there
you
were
out
people,
in podcast lane, all new music used to come out on Tuesdays.
Tuesdays. Right. And it's still the case.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the majority of it, I think, is exchanging hands digitally. So it could just come out whenever.
Right.
At any time, whenever. And so I'm wondering, I mean, when does your CD drop? But tell me about the process, the thought process of, like, when you choose the drop date.
So there is a release party in Manhattan, Lower East Side, on October 1st.
The living room.
Right. So the CD will be there. Right, so people can buy the
physical
CD. There.
CD.
Yep. And this is the conversation we're having. Since we're not actually doing a party in Philadelphia until November 4th, when do we actually give the people the CD? Is it some kind of big reveal that you want to like hold on to it, or do you want to just put it out there? So we think probably after the New York show, it'll just be available. But it's a very good point, Todd. It's like, what do you do? Do you wait?
Yeah, I mean, like if it's ready, and especially if you're selling it digitally, I mean, I imagine you are.
Indeed.
Right, so yeah, I mean, it could just be, so, and then, or you can leak it, and that creates a whole
Have
you kind of kicked around the idea of not even doing physical media anymore?
I don't know what that means.
Like not having CDs, just going digital.
You know, a lot of people, Russ, are going the opposite way and just doing vinyl, and they're kind of putting vinyl out with a card that has a digital download that you can get. So for people who really want to have the iPod, but all my friends who have done vinyl wind up with basements full of that they don't know what to do with.
Right, they're like, oh, hurricane's coming, it's time to move some vinyl.
And you know, the vinyl basement that they make today is so kind of flimsy.
Is it really?
It used to be like a serious record that you could like break over somebody's head. You know, now you would just kind of flop on their head. It's just a little
really?
Thin. Yeah, you should see the difference.
I didn't realize that.
Like the free ones that used to come in magazines.
Oh.
Maybe not quite that bad, but pretty
close. The back of cereal boxes,
yeah. Pretty. I had mine done on Cafe Press. The CDs.
I bought an album this weekend that was the exact size and maybe the thickness of two business cards. And there's a bit of it that swung out to a little flash drive.
Nice.
And you just plugged it in your computer and you moved the 10 songs from one place to another.
Yeah.
But I would say... part of you know your idea, Brian, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but the aesthetic of having art that goes with the CD is also a big draw, correct?
Yeah, and I've always tried to choose a friend who's a visual artist and feature their work, sorry, Todd, on the cover. And I really do wish I would have met with you guys a couple months ago because you bring up very good ideas about the record. You know?
Yeah, Cafe Press. Hooters, Cafe Press, it all comes together in the next album.
I'm told that people still want something physical to hold in their hands and to look at. I don't. I mean, as soon as I get a CD, I rip it and I have it, you know, all over the house and I, you know, networked and all that stuff. But there are people, I guess, who still do want a physical CD, you know. There is still, like, a record store at, what is it, Broad Street and Chestnut? I mean, somebody goes in there, right?
Yeah. No, but the whole idea of, and I think that was another thing with the vinyl, has, you know, people are putting out vinyl again. It's also for the art. You know, people miss that nice big, you know, piece of art that people could have. And
yeah, well, I think that's why, you know, you when you see, like, the established artists, you know, like doing, doing re-releases of old albums, and like they're very clear to say how many grams the vinyl is. So it's being, you know, oh yeah, like they always say, you know, there's also like this very specific edition that is on a whatever it is, 160 gram vinyl or something. They're very clear about that every time. Yeah, so that, I guess it's so it isn't the flimsy stuff.
And
yeah.
People now are also going back to cassette. I'm not joking. Like there's this like hipster movement. Certain bands are putting out cassettes again.
I was at a party recently, the same party where someone told me that they went on a yoga retreat and Keith Moon was there.
Yogurt retreat, did you say?
It was a yogurt retreat.
Yogurt retreat?
She insisted
that, so delicious. Cultured.
She insisted that Keith Moon was there. I don't know if that's true or not, but I don't think it was true. But the person was telling me that their uncle gave them a box full of cassettes.
Yeah.
And swore it sounded better than any medium he's ever listened to music
That's
on.
That's 100% bullshit.
Yeah.
And so inconvenient.
Yeah.
Really, you know, to have to fast forward and rewind. And
all right, here's a question. How many cassettes do you still own that you have? Are there any you've held on to?
This is a tough question because I'm not a hoarder. I'm not a hoarder, damn it. But I definitely, I've been saving my cassettes because I thought, well, maybe someday I'd like to go back and catalog them so I know what I had.
Yeah.
Mighty Mighty Lemon Drop, you know, the Mighty Lemon Drops. I'm like, I didn't remember I had that, and I went, it's got a cassette of it. You know?
Yeah, yeah. So, Todd, do you keep any cassettes?
No, zero.
Russ, you got rid of all your CDs, so you wouldn't have any cassettes, right?
Yeah, they're all gone. Right. I have a very small handful of things, like bootleg type stuff, but that's it.
I just have, like, you know, you used to keep buying things that held cassettes, and you're like, I have 50 cassettes. My record collection right now is 50 kick-ass. Oh, I got four more. I have to buy another holder. So you'd have these, like, plastic...
Yeah, the padded cases.
Oh, no, Russ. I'm talking, like, real cheap. Like, just a plastic thing that held 50.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, and you'd, like, mount it on your wall, right? So I remember, like, my freshman year of college, I was, like, just had, like, seven of these mounted on my wall, and that's all I needed. And I remember, like, a guy coming in, and he's just like, you listen to really shitty music, don't you? This is in Philadelphia, back in, you know, however old I am. I'm not going to cop to that. But I'm like, no, not really. I don't think I do. And they're like, I've never heard of one of these bands. And I'm like, yeah, but you know what? I'm in college. This is where people are different. And this is where people really experiment with different music. I'm going to find all the people who appreciate this. For 4 years, everybody's like, you listen to shitty music, don't you? I'm like, what am I doing? And I was like, this is crazy. But then again, I was in Philadelphia. And I mean, I figured there'd be more of it, but it was all just like dance music and crappy music.
And then you found me.
And then I found you, yeah.
Jeff
yeah.
went to college before CDs were invented.
I did.
Is the moral of that story.
No, I was
filling my Darth Vader head with my Star Wars action figures at that time, I think, that year.
But I fully
who wants to come to one of my cassette parties?
I fully know when I go back to my cassettes
that
I will open the case and it will just be powder.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, actually, I read a really sweet, almost, I used the word sweet, but it was just, somebody tweeted that, and it was like this woman who was like a real indie music woman. She's like, I miss falling asleep to a cassette and then hearing the click of the cassette ending. And did that, when I read that, I'm like, holy crap, I remember. Like, you remember like being like, all right, side two of Life Fresh Pageant, put it in, I got, you know, 18 minutes to like knock out, and then you're just like, and there's something nice about that, no?
I'm sure there's an app you can get that makes a clicking sound.
Ouch. Thanks for ruining it.
Yeah. Like even drops like 8-track switching.
Yeah, just
for you, Jeff.
Well, yeah, that there was an 8-track I had. I mean, not my dad had, not me. And it was a Lynyrd Skynyrd, and no lie, you know, one of the sides cut off mid song.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it would literally just be like, you know,
and
you're like,
but the thing, yeah, exactly like that. But the thing about it too is that when an 8-track switched tracks, it was not like a little click.
No,
it was
the production
like,
number. Yeah.
It was like somebody like emptying it was like a dumpster.
Yeah.
Like ka-chow, ka-chow. And then the song would keep going. It was highly jarring. Do you remember the old verbatim cassettes? And when you would buy them blank, they had like it would go on the tape so that you knew that it was blank.
Oh,
so the blank tapes actually had like a sound like that on them. So then when you would record things off the radio and stuff, you'd frequently have like a song and then like a couple seconds of woo, and then another song. You guys seriously
never? I never picked up.
Are you serious?
They must have been the expensive tapes. Were they expensive?
No, they were super, super cheap. They were the cheapest ones.
Oh, no.
Verbatim was the remember, they were the big tape company. Why are you guys looking at me like that?
I don't remember.
We pride ourselves on buying the middle of the road, not the cheapest ones, all right. Not the expensive
you guys,
ones.
Okay, you didn't buck up for the. Remember, there was like all the different, like two, threes, and fours. Like the fours were the metal tapes.
Oh, yeah. I'd look Maxwell? At those and be like, I would love to be able to get those, but I'm going to get the 8-pack.
And they were a lot more expensive. Yeah.
That was really
You had to have a real crush on a girl to make it a mixtape.
On a metal. That's right.
Ryan, have you ever made a mixtape for a girl and put one of your own songs on it?
All the time.
Wow, that's nice. It must be you like the first three songs are pretty good bands, next four pretty decent, last three pretty good. You might like this guy.
Sometimes I just put a track of me talking.
Leading up to it?
I don't know if this is creepy or not, but I thought I would get myself talking.
Like horribly not subliminal messages, just completely bliminal.
Exactly.
And no sub.
It was just subliminal. The song would end and it would go.
Right. And then at the end it'd be like, let Brian get to second base.
What?
Let Brian get to. What is this song? It's wildly inappropriate. No, you never did that, right, Brian?
I could blame some of my cassettes on my roommate. Well, he didn't want these, you know, when I like we moved out like way back when. But now I'm gonna go home and open up my box of cassettes.
Yeah, it's fun.
I must have a thousand at least.
Whoa.
Yeah.
It's like little memories. You just pick them out. And it's
Do you
fun.
Even have a cassette player anymore?
I could find one. Yeah. I think I might have a Sony Walkman.
They're like memories where we don't have the technology to think about those memories.
That's right.
To remember them. I have a Brian Seymour question. By day.
You're lucky he's here to answer.
Yeah, perfect.
It's the best venue to have a Brian Seymour question.
By day, you participated in art auctioning and now art history instruction. And but by night, music production. So did it not make sense to you, or how come no visual art production, or not an emphasis on visual art production, or why not music instruction or music history teacher?
What do you mean in terms of visual art production?
Well, will you tell me?
Why am I not a painter?
Yeah, have you been? Yeah,
I'm actually a historian.
Yeah.
So I actually can't draw anything.
Mm-hmm.
This is a podcast, but I'll draw you something if you want.
I'll take your word for it, yeah.
So I would never was kind of...
But, you know, if you found someone who participated in one of the forms of art and then instructed, whether it be the history or the aesthetics or whatever, of a form of art, you would assume that it might be the same form of art. But for you, that's a little divorced. And tell me about that path.
Well, I mean, I think there are a lot of people who might think that if you play music, you don't want to learn too much about music because it'll kind of corrupt the stream. I don't believe that. I know a lot about music. I know about keys. I can, you know, kind of dissect the song and all this stuff. But I never really was interested so much in the history of music and as it drives culture where I am in art, whereas I feel like there's so much to learn about a culture through art. I never really was kind of drawn to music history in that way. So I think at the undergrad and the grad level, I got very interested in obviously the history of art and culture and the humanities more generally, but music was never really much a part of that. You know? And maybe that's something about growing up with rock and roll too. I mean, when you grow up, the kind of music that we grew up with, you didn't maybe have that long view. You know, I mean, the stations, Scott Muni and 102.7. Can you do your Scott Muni voice for me?
I can't. Oh, I'm not allowed. I mean, I did it once and he sued me. It's litigious. I don't want to get into it.
I mean, they just played, you know, classic rock. When we were kids, it was already like a museum of rock and roll, you know, when we were kids.
So do you know, I remember from NEW, they had that Bruce Juice was like their thing. Like, at Tuesdays, Bruce Juice, play three Bruce Springsteen songs. And they tried really hard to, like, let's do something for other bands. And they're like, and they tried to have Kink drink. And they'd play some Kinks. And, like, Scott Muni was all like, this is going to take off. And people were like, and, like, he was waiting for the phones just to explode with people, you know. All right, play Lola. Can we play some more Bruce? You know, just Kink Drink didn't take off. That's one thing I remember. Brian, your love of art, obviously as an art historian, is that what brought you to China? Because you, a lot of times I need to get in touch with you during summers or breaks, and you're not there, and it's very inconsiderate. And then I find out you're in China doing stuff there. Why?
I'll start by saying they do have the internet there.
Oh, okay.
Occasionally you can't get access, but you know that's only around.
Right.
You know.
You spend a lot of time in China, and you love it, and you're, you know, you talk to me in Chinese sometimes. When you, I think, want to make fun
it's
of
Mandarin
me.
Or Cantonese?
Mandarin, of course.
Chinese.
I'm sorry. I was there originally the first time to travel with a group that was studying Chinese culture. So
yeah,
I got really lucky. We went all the way out to Xinjiang province, way out in Urumqi, like basically the middle of Asia. It was really an amazing opportunity. But when I was there, I met a music promoter. I actually met the guy in New York City, and he had moved to Shanghai. So he said, you're going to be in China, do some shows. So he booked me at that time, booked me in Shanghai and Tianjin and Beijing. And
House of Blues in
well, that, yeah, and that was the next time I went back. I did a residency at the House of Blues every Monday. I played Tom Waits covers on the piano. And
you said it was your own stuff? Or did you copy it?
and I totally confused the people there with Tom
Is
Waits
there a
covers.
Chinese Dan Aykroyd?
Why would you ask that?
I don't know that. Why? What?
Hey, Brian, just totally off topic. Next time you go to China, can you spend
the
majority
of
your time of
the House
looking
of Blues?
For the...
Doesn't he own? Didn't he start the House of Blues?
I don't know.
I believe he did.
Yeah, you're digging deep there.
I don't know.
I think he was a founder
proprietor
of Blues Brothers 3000, the movie, which is fantastic.
What he's best known for, yeah.
No, so when you first performed for a Chinese audience and... But you performed some of your own stuff as well as...
Yeah, yeah. I toured and actually
well
did my own
pretending
material.
To be Tom Waits.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So, I don't actually wear the hat and smoke the cigarettes. And, yeah, yeah. I drink the whiskey. That's it. But, yeah, driving around and playing, taking the train mostly and performing in, you know, kind of coffee-house venues. I played in Ritong Park in the center of Beijing with a band that was from Inner Mongolia, which is part of China.
Mm-hmm.
And they had kind of come to Beijing to make it. You know? And
give us a, that would be like a band coming from like...
Probably a band that had been named by you.
Right.
Came from like Lincoln, Nebraska.
Lincoln, Nebraska, right. And then came to the big city.
And they all were so nice. And I had to kind of speak a little Chinglish with them. They didn't really know much English at all. And I kind of got by in the Chinese I knew. And they had this guitar player who played an upside down Strat lefty.
Right.
Who was wearing sunglasses and a white leather jacket and like these huge cowboy, it like didn't fit with the other guys at all. And I'm like, so did all you guys come from Mongolia together? Like, no, we got this guy, we got the Beijing. I'm like, I never would have guessed that. Never would have guessed that he was the ringer in the band.
Were they like just some like farming outfits and they had this one guy who was the...
Well, it was the music promoter's big idea that we should perform together. So he's like, come on, get up there. You know, I'm like, no, it's, you know, they're playing a song. He's like, they'll love it. Get up there. So I get up there and I played Sweet Thing off of Astral Weeks by Van Morrison because basically it's a couple chords. It's easy to pick up. And I have this actual YouTube on my YouTube channel. On if you go to BrianSeymour.com, follow through. In the middle of the, I guess it's right after the first chorus, I start to hear this like this moaning sound.
Right.
And it's the drummer actually doing the throat singing. Right?
Yeah.
So he's like doing this thing and he's I'm looking around. I thought there was like a tiger or something. So it was great. And then I'm playing and then I start hearing this like whistling sound. And he's making that, if you guys have never seen this, it's going to be hard to describe, but he's making this whistling sound with his voice that sounds like a bunch of cats in heat. And it's remarkable. So first there's like a tiger, then there's this whistling thing going on. Watch the video. It's really easy.
And
you're
just like, will you Mongolians cut it out? What else do you have up your sleeves?
It was pretty amazing. It was pretty authentic.
But it worked out.
Yeah, yeah. The hardest part was explaining to the people who did speak English what my lyrics meant. So after the show, they would come up to me and they'd be like, so what does that song mean?
Oh, yeah.
And it would be something silly like, you know, you could play like Baby Please Don't Go and they'd be like, what does that mean? Be like, well, he's going.
And there's like eight people with just, oh, he's going, right? And then what? And what happened to the baby?
The baby is an affectionate term we use.
When you play in China, is the audience, do they seem similar to an American audience or are they overly polite and quiet and mind their manners?
Yes and no. When you're in a club, they're very polite.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
But I played there's a guy I know who writes a blog called The Shanghaiest, which is very popular. They have them in cities all over the world.
Yeah.
And I played their happy hour at this place called Cotton's in Shanghai. And now I'm just back to being the guy sitting in the corner. So I'm the guy playing in the corner.
Yeah.
And man, it was the loudest gig that I ever played. Everybody's just talking, and I'm like, oh, what am I doing wrong? But I happened to have gone to a movie the night before in China where people actually talk on their cell phones to one another, like in the movie, sitting next to each other. Everybody's on the phone.
Just talking while the movie's going on?
Just talking while the movie's going on. Yeah.
Holy crap. So
I got used to the idea that in public, everybody's always talking, so it's not...
It's like in France, everybody's smoking. In China, everybody's talking.
Everybody's talking all the time. Yeah. It was a film festival. It was actually Danny Boyle came to speak, and he couldn't show any of his famous films because they couldn't get the license to actually show them at the Shanghai Film Festival. So I saw, what was the crazy movie I saw? I forget.
So he would just be
like karaoke versions of their film, of the film.
No, it was one of Danny Boyle's movies, and he was there for about 6 minutes. He like came and he like said a couple things, and he was like out the side door. And then his movie started, because what he knew that I didn't know is that as soon as the lights went down, everybody was going to start making phone calls.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I don't like it. I'm not going there now. I don't like that kind of society. It seems very, very not polite.
That does it. Just not going to China.
Sorry, kids, we're not going to China.
Not the 13-hour flight.
You know, it's normally we go to New Jersey, Pennsylvania. Anyway, so Brian, let's. I want to talk about not only China, but you went to L.A. to produce and work on and do this whole new album. You said Philly. I'm too good for you. I'm going to L.A. Is that true?
Edan Cohen, who owns Soundgarden, decided to retire from the business.
Right.
The guy who produced four of my
great
last
guy.
Records, I had nowhere to go. So rather than starting with somebody else, I had a friend in L.A. who had asked if he could produce a record, Greg Saufrady from Stew Boss, great band.
Yeah.
And so I took him up on it, and it was three different trips out to L.A. over a couple years, actually. It took me a long time to get it done. And it's the drummer from Stew Boss. His name is Yano, and the guitar player is Greg. Bass player named Chuck, who was just one of the sweetest guys, one of the best musicians I ever played with, and added so much to the record. Track three on the record is called What's Wrong With Me, and you got to listen to Chuck's bass part on that. And these were guys I got to know, played together a lot, rehearsed together, did a couple live shows, and I'd love to have them out for the New York show. I just don't think they're going to fly in for it, but...
Not just coming for the weekend to do that?
No. I wish they would. It was a great opportunity, though, to play with those guys. And what they did with the music kind of pushed my sound a little bit, kind of Ryan Adams.
Yeah.
Kind of Ryan Adams, but more polite.
What happened to Ryan Adams?
He's famously kind of not a nice person, I hear.
That's what I hear. Maybe that's what did him in, because you haven't heard from him in a while.
Yeah, so I'm going to try to get in there, you know. So
are we going to mark you as a new Brian Adams?
Why not, right?
You might just want to say...
Wait, did you say Ryan Adams?
No, Brian Adams,
oh, okay.
I'm talking about. I'm older than most people, and I only know music to a certain point. So Brian Adams is... You can talk about your Ryan. I'll talk about my Brian, okay?
He's just the Canadian Ryan Adams.
What was the greatest supergroup Brian Adams was involved with? Anybody? What was this? Brian Adams, Summer 69, did a song for a movie with two other titans of rock and roll.
Three Musketeers?
Three Musketeers movies, One for All for One. It was Sting. Right. It was ass. It was Adam, Sting, and Stewart. It was a big single. And let's just say it was magic. It was magic. It's a great, great attempt at a horrible song.
I think I have the cassette.
And Rich has the cassette. How about, we're talking a lot about your music, Brian. You notice we're talking a lot about music. Would you be so kind to play a little music for us live here?
I would be honored.
Wow. Now, would you do it solo, or maybe you would, maybe, I don't know.
Is there anyone here that would like to play with Brian?
Give me that guitar.
Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, Brian is going to play a few songs, not Ryan. Ryan Adams Seymour is going to play a couple songs right now with a Philly indie rock legend. Who are you bringing up with you, Brad?
I brought with me today Mr. Richard Kaufman.
Richard Kaufman. Are you talking Electric Love Muffin, Rolling Hayseeds, Richard Kaufman?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm talking Richard Kaufman, currently of Foxy Cotton.
Foxy Cotton. And we played Foxy Cotton on one of our podcasts probably about 2 years ago. One of my favorite songs still on my iPod.
One of the inspirations for recording the second track on the record, which is called, what is the second track called, Rich? Junk Passion.
Junk Passion.
That I actually went out to see Foxy Cotton play.
Yes.
and they played the song Junk Passion. I don't know how the hell he got his hands on it, but I guess we had written it together at some point.
And he stole it?
No, it was amazing. It was like,
wow. Here, you know, the hell out of it.
Oh, it was. I don't think you got one word right in the whole song.
But,
yeah, but so I decided to put it on my record. Richard inspired me to kind of go back and dust this thing off, and I recorded it with the guys in L.A., and it's track number 2.
Excellent. What are you going to play for us?
We are not going to play that song.
Okay. Why don't you get up and get ready to go play that? Todd, you're going to grab the mic for him. And Russ, can we play maybe a little more Ruby while they get ready to go? Would that
sure.
be possible? Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, very soon you'll be hearing live music.
Gonna make you pay every second you're without her. Ruby, she's gonna find her way naked in your daydream. She's an overdose. She slips in kaleidoscope. She's gonna make you pay every second you're without her. Ruby, she's gonna find her way. She's an overdose of popcorn at the movies. Yeah, she slips in kaleidoscopes across the floor like moonbeams. And answers to my most important questions. She whistles without meter, my latest great obsession. Important questions, she whistles without meter, my latest grade.
Gentlemen, Brian Seymour.
Did you save your best regards for me? Is that just absent formality? Well, I'm sorry about these questions. Shit, I don't even wanna hear. I'm sorry about these questions. Yeah, one more thing. Yeah, one more thing, dear. When you say forever, do you mean for this life or eternity? Yeah, eternity. Well, I'm sorry about these questions. I don't even want to hear. I'm sorry about these questions. Yeah, one more thing. Yeah, one more thing, dear. I'll keep one wide. I had a scene. That suspicious sky looming over me. Yeah, over me. Keep one wide out of sea. That suspicious sky is looming over me. Yeah, it's over me. Speak to me of young love, my sweet. Does resentment grow quietly, most quietly? Well, I'm sorry about these questions. See, I don't even want to hear. I'm sorry about these questions. Yeah, these questions. I'm sorry about these questions. Yeah, these questions. These questions. Did you save your best? Did you save your best? Speak to me of young love, my sweet. Yeah, these questions.
This is a song called The Coffee Song that was on my first record, oh, so many years ago. And we took it out to California, and we rewrote it a little bit, and changed the key, and
caffeinated it
a little bit. And it's The Coffee Song.
It was a Monday, it was a Tuesday. Anyway, this morning I was up in the face of that day, running for me. I'm forever busy catching up. Well, you know what I mean when the coffee is heaven and the waitress thinks you're cute. She's filling you up and you're too polite. Ask her to stop. It was a diner, Van Damme Street. That yellow violation flag's all stuck in my head. All the change from my pocket stuck the sugar on the table. And a meter was busted. I'd rehearse what I'd say. Well, you know what I mean when the coffee is heaven and the waitress thinks you're cute. She's filling you up. You go shooting your morning on a smile she's pouring. You're too polite to ask her to stop. It's gonna be a good day. It's gonna be a good day.
I was shaking, I wasn't moving right where I need to be. Heart dancing, really living a good day. It was a Monday, I was up, and that yellow violation flags up stuck in my head. I was shaking, but I weren't moving. I was too polite, far too polite. Well, you know what I mean when the coffee is heaven and the waitress thinks you're cute. She's filling you up, and you're too polite to ask her to stop. Well, you know what I mean when the coffee is perfect and the waitress, oh, and the waitress. It's gonna be a good day. It's gonna be a good day. You're too polite to ask her to stop. Yeah, it's gonna be a good day. You're too polite to ask her to stop. Yeah, it's gonna be a, yeah, it's gonna be a good day. Too polite to ask her to stop. It's gonna be a good day. It's gonna be a good day. And you're too polite to ask her to stop. Yeah, it's gonna be a good day.
Ladies and gentlemen, Brian Seymour, Rich Coffin. Another round of applause for him. Screw this beer. I want some coffee. Right, people? Who wants some coffee after that? I do. I certainly do. We're going to bring Brian and Rich up right now to chat a little bit. Todd's going to do some microphone in. Look at this. Bringing a microphone right over. We're all going to scoot over. Right, you come in here.
Oh, jeez.
Scoot in. And Rich in there, and then Todd will get at the end there.
Brian is not paid by the coffee lobby.
That mic's live, right, Russ? We can continue talking. Guys, that was great.
Thank you.
You two have played together maybe once or twice before. I can feel it, right? There's some chemistry, if you will.
There's a synergy.
How'd you two meet?
We met, well, we knew each other before, but...
Philly rock scene?
Yeah, the Philly rock scene.
Different gangs.
It's always encouraging when you turn up in the same place, you know, again and again. It means you kind of got the same taste in bands, and you know about the right free buffets around town.
Is that what it is, basically, where you all end up eating after shows?
But 100% honest, like, we've done so many shows together now that, you know, I don't know if you're watching. I know you people out in podcast land were watching, but we don't look at each other too much, not because we don't like each other, but because the music just kind of knows where it's going. So it's nice to know, you know, somebody's kind of anticipating your next move.
And that's kind of maybe the fun of it too, right? Like,
absolutely,
you don't
yeah.
kind of you don't know what's going on. Nice. And Rich, I have to tell you, big fan of Foxy Cotton. Not only am I a big fan, it was the first concert my daughter ever went to.
Were my kids there as well?
Yeah, they might have been. My daughter, who's six now, was 6 months old at the time. And we didn't bring earplugs, which we should have. It was at No Libs, Northern Liberty, with one of the parks there you guys played at. And it was loud, and it was awesome. And I was like...
I'm glad you said that, because I thought you, like, took them out to a club or something, you know?
No. I didn't take them
Juliet's
out to that.
Juliet's still signing about it.
Oh, she doesn't talk
Precious,
or hear
no.
or anything. No,
worst
she,
father
she,
ever.
She hasn't said a word or heard a word in her whole life because of that. But
you did tell me that's how you get around the cover charge, right? You bring your kid. And
pretty much.
I'm, you know.
Yeah. But no, that it was a very, you know, like, fond memories you have of your children at certain points. You're like... The first tooth, the first words, first concert. It was just so, it's like a perfect, you know, really nice. So, and she doesn't really listen to you guys too much anymore. She grew out of you guys, you know. She's into some different stuff. But I still listen. I think that's important. Right? Rich, also I want to bring up, which I find fascinating, many things that I find fascinating about you, many of your bands throughout the years I've been following. But you live in a house that's not really a house most people live in.
Now, I'm going to play a little game, Todd and Russ. You don't know this. There are many different types of houses. You can think of all your crazy friends who live in different types of houses. My friend lives in a development out in some exurb that's hellish.
Cottage.
A shire like hobbits live in. So many. Think of all the crazy different houses, right, that a human could live in. I bet you couldn't guess what type of house structure that Rich lives in.
Geodesic dome.
You son of a bitch! How did you do that?
Seriously?
Yes!
No, I really... Just a guess.
You that was a guess.
Just a guess. That's good.
Did you think he was going to guess, like, teepee?
Game
like,
over?
A wigwam, something, I was hoping.
A yurt.
Yurt. That's a great Scrabble word, too. It's a New York Times crossword
puzzle. It's like
that,
remember that MASH game? You found out if you're going to have a mansion or an apartment or shack or a house. There is no letter for the geodesic dome. Wait, explain to me.
Explain, yeah, Rich.
What does that look like, and how does that feel?
It looks like a soccer ball sunk into the ground.
Where is that?
The soccer?
Our geodesic dome. Oh, it's in Salem County, 40 miles south.
Wow.
We used to live. Actually, this was a local restaurant of ours when we lived in the Italian Market, and then we bought a plot of land and we moved down to South Jersey to.
Now, did you?
You had it built.
Me and my brother.
You're the first.
We built it.
And only own. Okay.
Yeah.
You get a kit. Comes in like boxes.
Yeah, you buy it by the kit. It's like a Legos, you know. But
seriously, it is a kit.
Yeah, it's a kit.
And what are some of the advantages?
It's
talking points at cocktail parties.
You can be the people that live in the dome.
Yeah,
the people that live in the dome.
You can't send the kid to the corner.
I don't know. I always wanted to live in a house with high ceilings.
Uh huh.
But we got some high ceilings in that house.
I remember your wife told me something interesting about, like, not having corners, which I thought
was very
funny.
Yeah, there's no
corners. Like, you know, you just kind of, you don't think you rely on corners in houses, but you do for certain
things.
Yeah,
is it hard to, like, arrange furniture in a house with no corners, I would imagine, or any flat walls? Or do
you it's hard to
have geodesic furniture as well.
I have a brother who's a visual artist, and he has all kinds of big paintings we can't hang because we don't have the wall space.
What is the longest flat run?
Well, we have some interior walls that are fine, but... The exterior, you know, it's a dome on the exterior side.
Yeah, completely.
Side. Yeah.
Okay.
It's hard to discipline with no corners.
Yeah. Wow.
And it's hard to dust.
Yeah. So what are the, really out of hard. All the joys of living in a unique environment like that, what's the one thing you're like, oh, God, I didn't see this coming?
I don't know. I wish I'd put dormers in on the upstairs windows. We did the funky, you know, triangular dome windows that look cool. But they're not really functional when it rains. You have to make sure all the windows are shut. Like, you can't even have them cracked a little. Because that's something to learn.
Sounds great in there, though. We rehearse in there, and it's
the acoustics are
totally different. It's
really probably the secret reason why I did it, because it sounds great in there.
Well, which is a problem, too, when I play, if I play a show at the Tin Angel or something, I'm practicing at home, I got great acoustics, it just sounds awesome. Even if I'm sucking, it sounds great. And then I get to the Tin Angel or not the Knock the Tin or any club, and the monitors are coming back, and they never sound right because I'm used to having,
Have you ever had a show in your house? Have you ever put on?
We
a
haven't,
show?
But I'm thinking
you really
should.
Open a geodesic club.
Maybe I should, have a house party there.
Do you think if you opened a geodesic club, you talking full on Guidos, not like just kind of just a club like fist pumping, like that'd be pretty. You could probably draw some people there, right?
We have enough room. We want to have a dance floor. We could have a dance floor.
You might want to think about that.
The Italian sphere. That's what we'll call it.
Good.
Do you talk to other, remember like when the Saturns first came out, the Saturn car? It was like such a unique thing, or they thought it was.
Oh, yeah. Like,
there
do,
was
do
a
you
club.
Wave other geodesic?
Like there was a club where these people would gather. It's just so lame. I don't know why I remember this. Because I worked with an annoying guy who had like a Saturn. He's like, guess where I'm going this weekend? And I'm like, parents' basement. He's like, no, we're going to a Saturn meetup where everyone who's bought a Saturn, we're going and driving there in our sedans and we're going to look at each other.
Oh, man.
Like, not that I'm equating Saturn ownership with a geodesic dome. No, that's not what I was getting at.
They're much cooler than we are.
No. People, please, don't even think that. I'm thinking, this is so, when you were building it, were there support groups like, all right, I'm at this point now, how do I and put this on this. You built one. How do we do that?
There is, there was a little bit on the, on the internet. And also, we would stop and just knock on people's doors if we saw a dome. I remember once we were in like Iowa, traveling
on
a little family trip, saw a dome, and we just pulled over and knocked on their door. And it was an interesting family. It was kind of we got the idea that the husband built the dome because he was into the idea. And then because the interior didn't look like your typical dome, modern sort of thing. It was all kind of tchotchkes and Victorian stuff. So the white, but the white wasn't going along with it.
Victorian geodesic dome.
But it was kind of a cool house, and they had like they had geothermal, heat and the water and everything. But it was, this woman let us into her house. We said we were building our own dome, and she. And we've knocked out a few.
Robbed the place blind.
Would you actually move?
You stole all her tchotchkes?
Would you actually move if you found out like Matt Lauer had one?
Yeah.
Who's Matt Lauer?
Very nice.
Must be very, very nice to not know that. Pitch how great your life would be if there were certain things
I
don't know who that is.
You can't unlearn it once you know
I just don't know who that is.
He's just so charming.
That'd be fantastic. One more thing about the dome. I'm just really, really. I love it. I think it's just so.
It's easy to tell people that you're. When you say we're the ones in the dome.
Yeah.
And then they go, oh yeah.
Very nice. Cool. So you guys play around together often, right? And you've done shows together often. Rich, what about you? Now I know Foxy Cotton on and off again project. Is it a just when you have time?
We always. Want to be on, but we're the laziest band in Philadelphia.
Nice.
Yes.
I love it.
We're lazy people. But
it's just, everybody in your band, you all have full-time jobs. You have a full-time job. It's like, while you're sitting there and you haven't played in a while, how much of an itch do you get to play? I mean, it's fun to go strap on a guitar, right, and just play, but you're like, there's got to be, Russ plays in bands. Like, I would just think that high you get when you're just, when you two playing together, but even playing in a band and you haven't done that in a while, got to get the itch, right?
Being in a band's like being in a gang. You like the guys you're with, and I love the guys in Foxycontin, and, that's why we started the band, because we knew Ravine, the other guitar player, I remember thinking, that's a guy I should be in a band with, because I just like him, and I like his energy, and he's the kind of guy you should be in a band with. And it didn't matter whether we knew whether we were going to work together as musicians, but it did. Luckily, it did. And, I like the guys. And, I do miss, we need to book another gig.
Really?
That's our problem is we just...
Is it just like one of you has to do it?
Yeah, one of us has to make the phone call, and nobody's good at that. It used to be we got lucky because we had, friends and, bands.
Yeah.
76 would call us and offer us a gig, so we wouldn't even have to, get off the couch to book the show.
You can do a gig at your place.
Yeah,
yes.
I'm totally rocking at the
dome. We just need one of our friendly bands to
be a little loud,
call us and give us a gig because we're too lazy to do it ourselves.
Russ, do you feel like, maybe we've talked about this before, but I feel like with certain needs like hunger and sleep, it's very easy to know that you need to sleep or that you need to eat because you have these physiological needs. And for me, art production, and maybe for you guys, music, it's not so black and white. Like, there's not this phenomenon where I feel like, I literally or even figuratively have an itch to make art. What I do know is when I'm productive artistically, I'm happier, I'm more pleasant to be around, I feel good about everything, so life is better. But unfortunately, sometimes it's hard for me to realize, if I'm not feeling so great, that that's what the problem is, because it's not so... There's not a connected feeling or urge that's so easy to read. Do you ever find that to be the case?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you guys feel this way because you probably haven't been away from you probably have never been away from it as long as I have. But music is so far on my back burner right now that I have realized lately that it has been contributing to some things. And then when I do pick up a guitar, which never ever gets to happen, but when it does, I realize, oh wait a minute, this is what.
This is
why
brings me joy.
Yeah, this is why I'm broken right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is my reason for living.
Yeah.
And
it's a struggle. I mean, and even though, and you can even acknowledge that fact that like, hey, this is, and you can talk about it, but then, the time comes where you're at your darkest hour, you feel like you're down in the dumps and you just don't realize that perhaps an outlet is clogged.
Mm-hmm.
No, I absolutely agree with that. My problem is quite often when I'm productive and I'm writing, it's like I'm tapping into a darker place. And sometimes, if you're a parent, you can't spend the time wallowing in that stuff, you work, do your best work, but you can't really
honey it's daddy's dark time, get out of the room. If I even talk about what I'm writing right now, you're going to be scarred. Now go do something in the corner. We don't have one. Oh, go do something somewhere else.
That's why on the record, I have the best kids. They do know that if I have the guitar in my hand, not to bother me.
That's awesome,
because I don't pick up the guitar as much as I should,
right? And
but
when
they
do
know that when the guitar is in my hand, they know that they have free license to go on the TV or the computer and leave me alone.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the dark thing, though, because, you know, Russ, Todd, it's a great idea that you're happy when you're productive, because I do know that feeling. But there also is a lot to work through. So, you know, the whole idea of, you know, art is pain and kind of working through things. I mean, I know music and creativity can really torture when you have something that you just can't get right, something you carry around. Especially with me, it's a lyric. I can carry a lyric around for days. And I feel great when I finish. But in the process, it is something that's consuming. Even if you're not sitting at the piano, have the guitar in front of you, singing all the time, you definitely carry it around with you. So I could see, you know, how it could be distracting if you have kids and the job and such. But I try to find time for it every day, and I write every night on the piano before I go to bed, and I don't record it. So I make sure that every night I write something, and then at least I know the universe is okay if I can make something happen, you know.
It's pretty cool.
You don't keep account of what you've made? You just sit and you...
I'm suspicious my neighbor is keeping bootleg recordings.
And what do you feel like if it's worthwhile, it will just stick to your ribs and you'll remember? And, I mean, is that the rationale there?
There's a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, also a lot of it's probably really horrible. Yeah.
Well, have you seen those things, the Buddha boards? Have you seen them for painting? They're like these big, like, they're like synthetic slate or something. And you paint on them with water, and you can really spend some time, and then you sit there and it fades away. And unless you take pictures of it or whatever you want, like, it's only just for the act of creating, and it's actually pretty freeing in that way. I bet you that's probably part of it, right? I mean, because that's one of the issues that I have now is that, like, because all the bands I played in stopped, then my outlet became recording, and that became not fun. Because I'm like, when I sit down, because I'm trying to record something and save it, I'm agonizing over what's the right sound, and it's not fun, it's work, right? It's not just creating for the sake, it's not just getting the Jones, it's like, it's another job.
Well, the product, you know, has suddenly eclipsed the process.
Yeah.
And, you know, it reminds me of when you think about the Aboriginal work, the Native Australians. For many, many, many years, the process of creating work, now you might recognize it because within the last 50 years, people have said, hey, this is interesting, and you could sell this, and you could market this, and, you know, people want this. But prior to that, they would make work that was very linear. It was inspired Keith Haring, very linear, very pattern-oriented. And the act of making it, you know, they would paint on tree bark or something that was not going to be around for long, or they even just discard it after the process. Or sand painting, you know, Native American sand painting, same idea. It's like, it's the process that is important, not the product. And I think in these cases, like we're talking about, it's very liberating. I think, like, making the thing, not the thing.
That's, well, I'm an Etch-a-Sketch artist. Yeah. My thing, I'll spend hours doing my thing, and at the end of the night, I will just shake it.
Just shake it clean.
I will, because it's the process. Artist
fleeting.
Yeah, it's the process.
I'm glad that you're a school teacher. I mean, that's what kids need to hear.
They
seriously
do need to.
They
don't listen to me.
Not the feel good here, but yeah, that's nice to know.
Yeah, he has his aides help out. Yeah, when, you know, when he just discusses something.
Makes things easier.
What? Brian, when Rich was just talking about getting a band together, the thing about you is you've had many different bands. You being Brian Seymour, and you've played in bands, but it's always then a chore to be like, all right, now I'm going on a show and I have to put together a band. Like, what's that like? Because it just seems like I love to work with him. Like, there's so many moving parts, right?
Right.
How do you do that?
Well, there's so many great players, and there's so many people that you want to perform with.
Okay.
There's something about, you know, there's something about Rich and I, though, are kind of lean and mean in the sense that we can take shows, we can rehearse, we can be available. And sometimes with the band, it's a lot of scheduling, it's a lot of, you know, commitment. And you never, I mean, when I was younger, I definitely pulled people along, because there was always that kind of hope of the big show or score and such. And you never want to pull people along. You want it to be something like Rich was saying before. You love to be with people. They want to play, you want them around. If they don't have time for it. You know, I mean, it's definitely... I once had a relationship with a band where, this is years ago, where, like Rich was saying before, nobody was making phone calls. I realized I was the only one doing anything. So I just stopped calling.
I remember I talked to you during this period of time, and you guys are doing really well, and I just said, like, hey, what's it? And you're like, you know what, I just want to see if someone else will make a phone call.
Yeah.
And it didn't
that was 2004.
Yeah, I remember that.
I just stopped calling the guys in the band, and we just never talked.
Isn't that weird to be like, Yeah. We're such a cohesive group. We do a lot of great stuff.
So you're probably still in that band.
Technically, yeah, yeah.
Picture three guys in Philadelphia going, all right,
Brian should call pretty soon.
Where's Brian?
You guys haven't been gigging lately. Yeah, yeah, but we got some shows probably.
That's the conversation starter. We're at the local pub.
Yeah, yeah,
I'm
right.
Playing in Brian Seymour's band.
Yeah, I'm still in the Seymour band. Are you guys playing soon? Hoping so, waiting for a phone call. We'll see.
We played that XPN singer-songwriter thing 6 years ago.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. Rich and I played the last time the band show was the singer-songwriter weekend. The new one across the river in Camden over there.
Brian,
that's an interesting question. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No.
How does a band officially break up? I mean, do you have to like say it three times? And like,
no, it usually dies by like slow.
Yeah.
Now, Rich, you've been in many prominent bands. I mean, you know what I mean, like. You know, there's bands where it's like Brian Seymour and the Seymourettes or whatever, you know, your backing band was. That was a horrible name. I don't know where we went with that.
You named us, actually.
I know. I went to talk you out of that. Yeah. But, Rich, you know, your bands prior to this, Electric Love Muffin, Rolling Hayseeds, very prominent bands. And, like...
For those of you who don't know, in the 80s, Rich was in a very famous Philly band called Electric Love Muffin, who were on vinyl, and they were amazing. So
yes.
If you don't know them, go pick
yeah,
them.
Definitely.
And they toured across the country in a van, the real deal. They played all over the place, and they're...
And we really had a real breakup.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Like, you guys have, like, how did that go? Not to bring up bad memories, but it was like
we did reach a point where there was an explosion and we realized we couldn't play together anymore. And it wasn't anybody's fault. It was just...
It just happens.
Too many months together in the van. And that, you know, it was like, okay, let's play out our obligations and then we're done.
And is it... Would you just kind of, like, boil it down to... Because, I mean, I read In the Van by Henry Rollins where it was a really great... It was, written by Henry, and maybe he was being a little dramatic, but he made, you know, similar music to you guys were doing early on. It was, you know, the clubs you guys played at were rough. The touring in a van was rough. And it wasn't like when you got to the venue, oh, we're finally here, it's beautiful. You played real shitholes, you know, like Henry did, you know, all throughout the country. And you're like, there's no respite from the shit you're dealing with except for the 60 minutes you're on stage doing what you love. The rest is like just hard work. And can you boil it down? Was the band like that torturous? You know what I mean? Like,
it wasn't anybody in particular. I think, you know, we started at, we were young.
Yeah.
And like normally, I mean, I think just what happens is you grow apart. And I was into one style of music. The other guys, each guy was in, everybody was growing apart. You know, when you're 18, the music you like is maybe all the same. Mm-hmm. And then by the time you're 22 or 23, you're all listening to different stuff, and you know you're still trying to grab that brass ring and trying to get that, you know, you're going for something. And everybody kept saying, "Oh, you know, it looks like it's going to happen for you," but it doesn't. And then you know you probably hang on too long. And we really were just a band that probably should have. We had our moment, and then we really didn't fit together anymore.
Yeah, like because you just grew up, and everybody's musical style went one way.
Yeah, I mean, I was in the country, and the other guy was more into funk, and the other guy was more into heavy metal. Didn't really matter. It was at the one point it almost got ridiculous that we were still in a band.
Is it fun to now go on YouTube and just see like videos from the 80s? Like you guys, I did a little search just to say, like, wow, you know, it's amazing. Like for a while, like you do a search for a band and there's nothing, and then like 2 months later, some guy's in his basement like, yeah, I have like 4 hours of Electric Love Muffin, I'll go put it up there.
Yeah, I don't
like,
know where
oh
these
God.
People come from.
It's amazing. Like, you know, I'm like one of those crazy people where like I love a band. Like, I want to see a live squirrel bait video, and I know I never will. But every time I have, like, a Saturday night free, which is, like, 51 weeks a year, I will sit there on Saturday night and be like, live squirrel bait video from, you know, 87 Louisville. No, it's not there.
Videotape didn't come to Louisville.
Yeah, but, you know, I know, right? But then again, like, you do a band search, like, 2 weeks later, and someone puts a gem up there, and you're like, this is the greatest. You know, like an Uncle Tupelo video that never existed all of a sudden is up there, and you know, search like, you know, 2 months later.
Well, you know, you brought up the hard part of the road, and we've all had kind of those kind of shows in the past. But to be honest, I mean, Fritch and I go to another city now.
Yeah.
I mean, singer songwriter type touring is, you know, you show up, they say try the Borzin burger, you know, like the place is air conditioned, you know, they want to know if you need a room. I mean, it's definitely not hopping in the van kind of torture. Not to mention the fact that even if you are in a band now, everybody's got personal communication devices and videos.
Oh,
and
so
the band can actually be isolated from one another, which I don't think is a good thing necessarily.
No, I don't know if it was because, I mean, we used to just,
put
it
a tape
in. It used to be like whoever was driving
got to choose
played
music.
The music.
Yeah.
So I would be driving and it was George Jones and it would drive him nuts. And then Butch would get behind the wheel and it was Soundgarden. So it was like it didn't matter, you know. And
yeah.
And that was kind of cool in its own way because it forced you to.
I'll just say this too, like, you know, musicians always overestimate their importance to the contribution of the team. I had a drummer one time, the day we were going to leave for New York, say, you know, I'm not going to the gig, I got this other gig, I'm not going. So we said, okay, we'll just do it without him. And we got on the phone and called this guy in New York, and he said he'd cover the gig. And from that point forward, that guy was out of the band.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm not going to New York. We're like, okay.
To be fair, though, that's just the drummer. I mean, come on. You know, like, any other guy in the band, you'd be like, yes, blah, blah, blah. But it's the drummer, right? I mean, very replaceable, right? Admit it. I'm really mean to bass player, but Russ plays bass.
I can't insult drummers. You need drummers, always.
Brian, I want to touch on new video is going to be coming out, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And this is like a full-fledged, you made a video, right?
I made a video. I went to New York, Phillips Auction House, which is right by the High Line. Where is that? It's like, I don't know, somewhere in Manhattan, out there.
Chelsea.
Yeah, thank you. Hip neighborhood. And yeah, so they got me in this. These are the guys. The Real RX is his online name. They make lots of video content for all kinds of people, like a lot of BBC stuff and Jib Jab and all those people. And so they have me in there in this art gallery with tons of very large abstract expressionist art. And they're trying to bring together the two sides of my life, you know. So mm-hmm. I've got the guitar, and I've got the huge paintings. They've got photographs, and I'm walking through the galleries, and I'm running at one point. I'm taking my suit off. And so then they send me the video, and it's me standing against a white wall.
That's it?
I'm like, where's the art? Where's all the running? Where's, like, the tie and the... I could have filmed that in my basement.
So they filmed it all. They did it all. But then they in the edit, they just said, we don't need that. We just want to...
I could just picture him with the mouse. Not working. This isn't good. Nope, not working. Nope, not good. You know? So finally, I'm just in front of a white wall. But there is one painting that figures in the video. And please... If you actually
like take on me, like you go into the painting, this whole motorcycle chase.
If you did, in fact, buy that painting at auction, please don't sue us for putting it because we didn't actually get the clearance for it.
But I mean, besides that, it's going to be a great video that we're.
It's
going to
be released on YouTube, and we don't know. We don't know when, but very soon. So check in with the website probably in about 2 weeks before the record comes out. The video will come out.
Excellent. I want to touch on just one thing that I always love to do when I have musicians on or we have groups on. I always like to do worst gig, best gig, but I you know, worst gig is always, you know, obviously.
This one,
thank you very much. Not very good at all. How about just best unexpectedly good gig where you guys have played, you know, you're like, we're going to this town, we're going to this place, it's not going to be good, we played there before. But have you ever been like, whether it's just something crappy you weren't expecting, it was like, you know, onerous going into it, and it turned out to be, wow, people were cool, it was great, and I didn't expect that.
Actually, some of the best gigs were the ones that you don't think are going to be great, but they're, you know, eight people in the room and you
just kill it.
You just kill it, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I remember once playing The Rat in Boston to like 12 people, and it was the best the Muffin ever played. We were just on that night.
And is it when you know there's only, like, you know, I don't know how much you can see out there with the house lights on, or the lights on, whatever. It's just like you kind of, it's only 12 people, you just.
I don't know what it is, but, you know, also, unfortunately, it goes hand in hand with the show where you're in front of 500 people and you just blow it. You know? So, I don't know why you can't, you know. Yeah, I don't know. I can't figure out why it works that way, but.
Right.
Yeah, actually, it's funny you went to Boston. Same thing. I went to a little club in Boston. I was very happy to get in when I was just starting out, and it's closed down now. I don't even remember the name of it, and it's like a little stage in the back, and I had brought a couple
Boston
people
Market?
Who I knew in Boston. It was at the Boston Market, yeah, on Ardmore. Yeah. But no, it turned out to
it's
be
really
the
potatoes.
Kendall Cafe. That's what it was, Kendall Cafe.
It wasn't Boston.
It just turned out to be the best night. The woman who had played before me, I remember her name was Rama, and she was going for like I think the one name thing. And her crowd stuck around and was really into what I was doing, and for that one night. It was like my first real gig in Boston when I was a young guy, and I thought Boston was the best town I'd ever been in.
Speaking of other towns, you're going to be in the living room in New York City October 1st.
Lower East Side, Ludlow, Stanton and Ludlow, 7 o'clock.
Very
Saturday
nice.
Night.
Saturday night. It's a great night to have a show. And then if we go to, if we stay in Philly where we are now, we want to see you. We don't have the wherewithal to travel to New York, but we want to see a record release party. Where would we go?
Tin Angel, November 4th, 8 o'clock. That's in Old City.
Tin Angel. That's a great place.
Old City on a Thursday night. You can handle that.
You have the bar way in the back, so if you want to like get all chatty and get all liquored up, and then you guys play all up in the front, nice stage. Great place.
Great sound. It'll probably be Rich and I, maybe some members of the band. We'll have to see how it goes.
Maybe some drummer.
not now. Now that
no, we'll just pick one up.
Every drummer in the
no,
zip
we'll
code.
Just pick one up there. Mm-hmm. Someone drummer who's hanging out in the crowd. We're winding down right here, right, Russ? We're going to, we like to end the show with shouts. We like to give props to things we like, other people. So if you guys, Todd and I will, and Russ will go first, but think about anything you want to shout out. It could be your own stuff or anything you like. TV, music, internets, cassettes, whatever you're into. Todd, what are you into now? Let's get a little shouts going.
Saturday evening, the Fringe Festival just concluded here in Philadelphia, which is always, I think, exciting, right? So avant-garde, cutting edge, in many cases, theater. But the show that we saw Saturday night was part of the Fringe Festival. It's going to run until October, the beginning of October, so you still have a chance. And there were three acts, three segments of this show. The first part you spent in front of the computer meeting the characters as they met one another on social networking. You become friends with them on Facebook. You see their Tumblr feed. It was immersive. And then you take a walking tour with a video podcast. And you walk around Philadelphia, and you're holding the screen, and you're seeing the characters populate the areas that you're standing. And it was really very, very interesting.
This seems like a lot of work.
I'm glad you say that, because it was more work than a show normally
is. Seems like a Wayne Coyne show.
But then by the time you end at the show, which is a stage production, you know, like when you see the characters, I mean, you feel very... invested in this whole and the experience was really incredible. The production was incredible. The website
that
they put together. So it's called Extremely Public Displays of Privacy is the name of the show. And if you go to extremelypublicdisplays.com, you can experience the first two chapters, you know, even just remotely, even if you don't intend. And it's a beautiful piece of work. And it's actually about a woman who's a music teacher who was in a band when she was 22. And she was at a gig, and the band broke up, like, on stage. She never finished this big show, never quite made it. And she meets this woman, and she actually has an affair with this younger woman, this kind of online affair. So the conclusion of it, or the third chapter, is you go, and this woman, who is a music teacher and a mother of two, has kind of, like, barricaded herself in this basement and is kind of, like, now living out this show that never was written and or never performed correctly, at least in her mind. And the music was really great, and that's the CD that or the album that I said as we left. Then we were given these little cards with the album of the character that created the work, and the music was really captivating.
How long was this whole walking around?
About as long as my explanation. Just about as long.
Yeah, actually.
Well, I mean, I went on Facebook. I actually friended there's the two characters. You friend on Facebook.
Yeah, so you're familiar.
And you sort of follow. It's a new paradise.
New
Paradise Laboratories. It's
them.
No, they're great. Yeah, they're
it was really amazing. And here's the thing. We got to the show, and we were blown away already by the time. I mean, it was really, the production was incredible.
Yeah,
and great. Then we got there, and we were like, my wife and I were two of six people, five people.
Yeah.
And the amount of energy
really?
And money and time and talent that went into this. And I worry and I wonder, is it because people looking at this big, long list of Fringe show possibilities, you know, you see, all right, well, this is too involved, or this, you know, this involves downloading and watching and walking, and but I would recommend anyone check this out, because it blew me away. It was really interesting.
Wow, that sounds fun. How long did the whole night take?
It was about 20 minutes on the computer meeting these characters and going through all these things, and then it was about a 40-minute walking tour. But the weather was beautiful; it was perfect. And we, like, in the tour, there's a part that they go to a restaurant. We stopped, we had a few drinks, and ate. You know, like, so you feel like you're in the middle of the show, and like you're also having the evening to yourself. I mean, it was great. I'm not saying that's the future of shows, but, you know, maybe there.
You're
is
saying
that,
this is the future of entertainment.
Every single show, if they don't have
better
that,
have this interactivity component.
Boring.
Boring. Right. All right.
It's what things like the Fringe Festival were made for.
And that's exactly it. Yeah. So it was really interesting and very unique.
Excellent.
So I wouldn't mind if next time, before we actually do a podcast, is maybe we do a little bit of online content.
Yes.
To give the people a walking tour on their way over here.
I think maybe the online content should just be us uploading 400 pictures each of our kids, and they have to go through each one to see our kid photos. They're so cute. And then the walking tour would just be maybe, like, you know,
Maybe they can mow our lawn.
Like footage
or something.
Of me moonwalking.
Yeah,
down,
something like that.
Down Broad, yeah.
Sounds good, Todd. I like that.
Check it out. ExtremelyPublicDisplays.com is
excellent.
Where you can.
Russ.
Nothing significant this time.
Nothing significant?
Pass.
Wow, a pass. That's really sad when Russ passes.
It is sad.
You know, sometimes I'm really busy at work. I don't have time to, you know, get on the internet and look at all the stuff that's going on and trying to find something that, you know, I might like. So I'm just going to say maybe go buy some Uriah Heep cassettes because they're a great band and not a lot of people appreciate the music they made. Sometimes I'll do a shout.
Was that Russ?
No, yeah. it was Russ.
That was good.
Oh, boy, where did that come from? I'm sorry. Brian, how about you do a couple shouts or, you know, shout whatever you like or yourself or
Okay, first of all, I want to definitely do a plug for the band Stew Boss.
Yes.
So Greg and Yana, who played on my record, they have a new record out called Pilgrims and Runaways that you can find online, just like the boss of Stew, S-T-E-W-B-O-S-S.
Yes,
Stew Boss.
Right.
It's great. Great record, great Americana. Think early Wilco, but, you know, a lot of energy. They tour the country less frequently than they used to, but definitely try to check them out online.
Nice. That's it?
That's it. And also, I wanted to make sure I had that date right. The New York show is the 3rd.
Oh, my goodness.
The Philly show. Philly show is the 3rd. All right, let's run through these again, Jeff.
Yeah, let's do this again.
I was reading off of Jeff's notes. So it's October 1st in New York City, which is a Saturday night. And it's a Thursday night, November 3rd, at the Tin Angel in Philadelphia.
Yeah, don't go there on the 4th.
No. And definitely, you know, you can find me online. It's Seymour, S-E-Y-M-O-U-R.
Excellent. That's right. Brian Seymour. Rich?
I don't get much. Things that inspire me. I was listening to Fresh Air, and Nick Lowe was on.
Oh.
There's a guy that never ceases to inspire
me. That was a great interview, yeah.
Great interview. He's charming, and he even charmed my kids. We're in the car. My kids were impersonating him, but by the time we got to the end of the drive,
really?
They were like, he sounds like Russell Brand. And my son is like, I'll have it a go, Terry. And he's doing the accent. And it was charming, but it was, you know, Nick Lowe is the guy every musician should want to grow up to be,
Guy
who has never tried to do anything false. He's always been kind of pitch perfect in his career, and he still is. And his new record, songs on that record are stuck in my head right now, and they're just constantly running through it.
How great was Rockpile? Remember
Rock
his band?
Pile.
Absolutely, Dave Edmonds.
Dave Edmonds and Nick Lowe.
Can I tell you, too, I heard Nick Lowe on an interview years ago with Terry Gross said that, I don't know if you know, but he wrote the song Peace, Love, and Understanding that Elvis Costello made famous. And he said his agent called him up one day and said, you just made $1 million. And he said, what are you talking about? He said, well, Whitney Houston herself chose Elvis Costello's Peace, Love, and Understanding to be in her movie.
Oh, my God.
The
Bodyguard.
Curtis Steiger's cover.
I'm
the
sorry.
That's the funny thing. It wasn't Elvis's version.
And he owns all the rights to it, and he didn't pitch it, like Rich said. He didn't like.
What
you know,
a great phone call.
He didn't whore his song out. He didn't try to get it out
just
there.
Happens.
She chose it, and he just sat back and collected the money.
Let's have a big round of applause for that.
Yeah. Songwriter hero, Nick Lowe.
Well, we should end on that note because I think that's a nice note to end on. I'd like to thank everyone involved tonight. I'd like to thank your audience for coming out tonight. Thank you very much. Big round of applause for you. I'd like to thank Lataj, as always. Lataj, one of the greatest places in Philadelphia.
I had a fabulous duck salad at L'Etage. I just want to tell the listening audience.
We're going to put a link to that duck salad on our website.
No ducks were harmed in the making of this show.
It is delicious.
If you could play one more song, I mean, if you have one in you to play. So, well, we would play a song out on the podcast. How about a song from the new album?
Yeah, the song that the video is going to be of is called Every Tomorrow. It's the first track on the record, and it's a song that I actually wrote last June on the way out to California. I kind of wrote the song as I was going and finished it in the studio. One of my favorites.
Thank you, everybody. That was Usewigs Radio Podcast. Thanks, Brian. Thanks, Rich, Todd. And let's hear some Brian.
Hard like a bullet train. Tired of walking insane. Tuning out voices of poets and those who don't believe.